Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. While Singapore shares were trading muted this morning following mixed results in global markets, in early trade, the Straits Times Index was up 0.01% to 3,172 points after some 140 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Now, closing numbers, they're still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen. The Straits Times Index currently up 0.2% at 3,178 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 966 million Sing dollars. The gainers trailed losers, though, 227 versus 275. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, Yangtze Jiang Shipbuilding, Sing dollars, Seatrium, Singtel, and OCBC. Heavily traded securities included Seatrium, Yangtze Jiang Shipbuilding, Sing dollars, and Thai Beverage. Now, in terms of companies to watch for today, we do have Singapore Post. The National Postal Service provider announced the completion of its strategic review today, and that was initiated back in May last year, if you recall. Now, elsewhere, from the Bank of Japan's historic move to end its negative rate policy to NVIDIA expanding collaborations with BYD and other Chinese automakers racing to build self-driving vehicles, we've got more international and corporate headlines in focus today. Joining me on the line is Oriano Litza, sales trader at CMC Markets. Oriano, welcome.
Hi, Jian. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you on board. And Oriano, let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual. How has the STI fared so far today? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers, say Manulife US REIT? Its manager today announced some leadership changes. CEO, Deputy CEO, CFO, CIO, they all stepped down in June. So what's happening here?
Yeah, an interesting one with Manulife. I think that, you know, obviously in intraday today, it was somewhat subdued. What I think they've done quite cleverly from, you know, an investor standpoint and optically is obviously they've looked to reassure investors with new successes. Obviously, the new CEO and CEO has taken will be taking over. And I guess they really emphasize their recapitalization plan. And that goes a long way to naturally show some strategic thought, even after, you know, obviously those real C-suite changes back in June, like you previously mentioned.
Okay, and let's zoom in on some companies to watch. Oriano, we've got here SingPost, I believe shares up some 7% over. It announced the completion of its strategic review today, which was initiated back in May last year. Now, among the new plans that the board approved to be executed over the next 3 years is that the firm will reorganize its corporate structure into three business units, and it also aims to pay out 30% to 50% of underlying net profit from FY 2024 to FY 2025. How would you read into the move? How far has the review been priced in, though?
Yeah, I think it's been priced in, you know, fairly substantially. I think the really good strategic move here from SingPost is the transitioning to a true logistics business. Mm-hmm. Just from a term in terms of a geographical perspective, where they've really, I guess, sort of segmented, you know, their different business arms, but also from a divestment perspective, should they look to either sell any of them in the future. Back to your point regarding the payout of 30% to 50%.
Yeah.
Now, as a whole, obviously that looks, you know, that does look very high and obviously quite encouraging for investors. But that is a little bit off the 60% to 80% dividend policy that the company came out with, and which they haven't actually reached in the past 2 to 3 years. I think in terms of, you know, real cost savings or, mm-hmm. you know, your clawback from the business, we will probably have to take probably another 6 months to 1 year to really see that reflect in the share price. Mm-hmm. But it's been fairly favourable in terms of these strategic moves. Not very favourable in terms of these strategic moves. It's fallen from 50 cents down to 38 cents. There's a little bit more to watch. And obviously from a trend perspective, obviously to the downside for the time being.
Now, from SingPost or Reno, let's turn our attention to Singtel. I recall a number of years back, we were looking at software as a service, SaaS model. Now we are looking at GPU as a service. And Singtel is launching GPU as a service in Singapore and Southeast Asia in the third quarter of this year. And this is a cloud-based solution that offers access to graphic processing units, GPUs on demand, which includes super chips from NVIDIA. Could you break this down for us in layman terms? What does the new offering mean for Singtel?
Yeah, so I think, pretty much, to keep things fairly simple, any vendors who are storing large data sets in any of these data centers, whether they be locally here in Singapore, they've also got through their data center arm locations in Thailand and Vietnam. It's just a case of the ability from these GPUs to be able to process those volume sets, as well as provide storage. Another good thing, I guess, optically for a company of Singtel size is from a somewhat ESG perspective, where a lot of the energy consumption will be reduced by around a quarter. So yeah, some interesting moves of late by Singtel. There was obviously rumours circulating regarding the sale of Optus, the telco in Australia, which has lost steam and has been confirmed isn't going ahead. But I think obviously the partnership with NVIDIA is very timely, given it's been in the news, and it's obviously giving these Singapore companies a lot of kudos that they're getting first rights or first refusal to this new technology.
Right. And if you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Oriano Litza, sales trader at CMC Markets. Across the region, Oriano, all eyes on the BOJ. The Bank of Japan officially ended its negative rate policy today, raising rates for the first time in 17 years. Now, if we look at the numbers, the benchmark rate was moved up from negative 0.1% to 0%. The central bank also ended its yield curve control policy. How far was that within your expectations? I recall a few days ago, we were just talking about the BOJ perhaps holding on this time round and raising rates in April.
Yeah, I was caught a little bit off guard. I mean, we were discussing internally amongst the team about who would have thought, if they were going to have enough evidence to, move from that negative to that flat or positive interest rate environment. So I did actually think with the minimum wage increase from the unions that would actually push or give enough sort of impetus without actually having to touch rates. But obviously not. BOJ is trying to obviously, show some direction to the market. I mean, in terms of market reaction, I think that it was priced in before the decision. Mm-hmm. But watching trading this afternoon in Europe, we have seen obviously the yen soften a little bit and the dollar gain momentum off the back of that with institutional fund flow from Europe and the US due to come in tonight. So a little bit more downside. And with the Nikkei, touched on that 40K level again. This is interesting. It's a historical move. But not if you think of 10 basis points in financial terms, it's not a huge move. But I guess, it has been in this negative interest rate environment for so long. With the removal of the yield curve control, whether they can actually manage that, because it was such a pivotal kind of, backstop from that. Now, in terms of growth for the government, obviously they were looking to be stimulated through spending rather than, savings in the bank's monetary system. So that will be one that will be interesting to see from a consumer standpoint. But one thing to watch out for is the outstanding debt servicing. So obviously, like a lot of central banks, the BOJ has got debt on its books, and also consumer debt as well, because something like 0.1% on a huge volume of debt, could make a hell of a lot more difficult to pay back.
And don't mind me asking this, because I recall yesterday I was just having a conversation with David Kuo from The Smart Investor, and we were just talking about how Japan is beginning to see the green shoots when it comes to wages growth negotiations with unions, as you mentioned, and now it is increasing rates. Is it too soon, too early, and how would it complicate matters for growth, even though we say that we're going to spur growth through spending this time round?
Yeah, well, that's the balancing act that most economies have obviously had to face. And a great example of that is the US. You have great wage growth, job creation, which, obviously has spurred inflation. The concern for Japan is at the rate in which these particular decisions and the impact for inflation will actually have. I think they, that's why I thought potentially they would hold to see the impact on the minimum wage growth, to see how that filters through to the wider economy. But they've looked to showing their cards, obviously early here. There was concern with that deflation for so many years with negative interest rates. I guess it will be a matter of time to see, how fast this filters into the economy.
Now, aside from the Bank of Japan, Oriano, the Reserve Bank of Australia also announced its interest rate decision today, keeping interest rates steady at 4.35% for the third straight meeting, adding that, of course, it'll take some time before inflation comes down to the target range of between 2 and 3%. Now, on the whole, when we look at the rate decisions by the BOJ and the RBA, how far have that influenced markets in Asia today? And if I may add, the US Fed coming up midweek, what should we watch out for as well?
Yeah, it's a big week from a central bank perspective. If we start with the RBA, I still think they are a little bit reticent to give any clear direction. And obviously holding for a third consecutive meeting shows a sort of somewhat non-committal approach against those targets of 2 to 3%. I think they are looking at that, that dollar continues to decline as well, Aussie in this instance. How does that sit with other central banks? I think, the Fed holds all the aces in this instance. Obviously, I think the yen is particularly at risk, should Jerome Powell give any indication of a hawkish approach or no move rhetoric. So that's what I think we'll be looking out for. I don't think the Fed makes any firm decisions for the time being in terms of, any specific cuts. But with the language that we're looking for to give us any indication in terms of direction. The move, but like we go back to the BOJ, I don't think we're going to see any major serious adjustments. It's a huge move for them historically and culturally. So they are, I guess, at the window of obviously the other economies, especially with the greenback. But there could also be concerns regarding that weaker yen strength and a short squeeze up to around 152 level.
Sometimes, you talked about the Fed. I wonder if you're reading too much into the language, because it seems like they are also struggling for direction as to where to go, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, I watch markets, you're always looking for some sort of intel or insight. And it is very easy to get caught up in, a couple of keywords or something. When there really isn't a clear direction, I think you're spot on with your analysis there. I don't think they're in any great rush in terms to move the needle too much. It'll just be a case of how many and how quickly they do that. But with the economy still growing, I don't think they want to, they want to continue that growth, especially from a corporate perspective, as it continues to kind of defy those market mechanics with a still somewhat stronger dollar, but corporate earnings and growth still going in the right direction.
Right. And finally, before we let you go, Oriano, I have about 1.5 minutes to go. NVIDIA said it is expanding collaborations with BYD and other Chinese automakers that are racing to build self-driving vehicles and AI-augmented infotainment technology to compete in global markets. How significant is this piece of news for NVIDIA and the EV makers?
Yeah, I think it's an important move, I think, especially from the Chinese EV makers to reassure, I guess, consumers about suitability and also safety measures as well. I guess there's a natural correlation with a brand like NVIDIA, who are producing these sort of, chips, that naturally they will be good, which will improve, the self-driving capabilities of these particular cars. And I guess there's that brand recognition as well. I think they have struggled a little bit against the Western nations, like the likes of Tesla, even though that is struggling from a share price perspective. But people do associate, obviously, brand recognition with purchasing power and consumption. So sector perspective, I think performance of Chinese EVs has drastically improved against its American counterparts. And they've just simply gone to a price, in spurn, basically a price war. And that has actually increased, a lot of production levels against them. So it goes without saying, NVIDIA will still continue to set those all-time high. I think it's still the darling of the stock market. And I think these strategic, partnerships with different verticals will pay off.
Right. Thanks a lot for the insights, as always, Oriano. That was Oriano Litza, sales trader at CMC Markets. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.